All right, we'll get started. So there's still time to go see the falconry talk, if you're not aware. There are no falcons live or stuff that I know of. So this talk is, I think, pretty well suited for a Nauticon audience. How many of you guys are actually in InfoSec in some broad? Okay, so good mix. Who's a web developer or does web programming for fun or otherwise? Okay, so there's people in that crowd. And then who's just like, you do other shit. Perfect. Okay, so the nice thing about this talk is it really, this talk really kind of pulls in everyone's life. There's going to be vulnerabilities, there's going to be exploits, there's going to be methodology, perspectives on InfoSec. And so hopefully if you're in the audience, something's going to ring home and hopefully entertain you, if nothing else. So I'm Mark Stanislav. The really focus of this entire presentation, at least in my mind, is this quote: "Thank goodness the working exploit will remain as the gold standard for cutting through the BS in the field of data security for the foreseeable future." Marsh Ray, if you're not aware, fantastic researcher. Two years ago, some big things with SSL. He's a very respected and I think very maybe introspective in regard to the community for pulling things in that we all think we know, but he has this way of summing up things very, very eloquently. So there's a lot that can be said about who's in InfoSec, who's not. If you're a pen tester, you're in InfoSec. But if you're a sysadmin, you're in InfoSec. If you're a web programmer, you're in InfoSec. It may not be how you get paid or what your job title is. Consequently, we should all be in InfoSec, though. So in my day job, I'm actually a Linux admin. I work for a managed service provider, and if you ever get the chance and you are a sysadmin, that is the best job you can ever have. And I'll tell you why. Because ultimately, in a sysadmin position where you're in a company or an organization that's maybe dynamic in what you do day to day, but overall you're in one organization. I get to work in hundreds of organizations. I get to see hundreds of deployments of infrastructure, hundreds of different web apps for different purposes. So in my daily life, I get a real perspective on technology and information security in a broader sense than just, I work for a financial company. I know about financial security. I know about PCI. You kind of get really interdisciplinary skill sets that you wouldn't otherwise have in a place where you focus on one kind of IT. I'm actually just kind of finishing up a role I had with a Michigan university. I've been teaching and developing curriculum for Linux courses. So that's been fun. And the other thing about teaching is you actually get to learn the things you thought you knew, and then when someone asks you a question, you go, you know, I don't really know why I typed that flag, but let me actually look at the man page and tell you, because I've just been doing it for, you know, 10 years. And then boredom. everyone's kind of got their IT boredom. Some people are going to do their website or whatever. In my case, I think finding web app vulnerabilities is kind of fun. It's something that, in my case, I've been a PHP programmer for 10 years, somewhat professional sometimes, otherwise just a kind of a hobbyist. You know, it fills a gap if you need to get a website up. As you can see down there, I'm more... Ruby is a lot better than PHP. If anyone tells you otherwise, they're lying. So I've started becoming a big fan of Ruby, and the history I've had with PHP and the perspective I have on PHP is from a sysadmin and a developer, and that uniquely places me to know what's okay and what really sucks. And we're mostly going to talk about what sucks today, but hopefully you'll learn kind of in an anti-pattern way what you should be doing. So there's a couple primers in here, because I understand not everyone in this room is obviously in InfoSec, and more so if you're a web programmer, you might not even realize things that are bad or ways that you could get attacked. So we're just going to cover some really quick ground rules, if you will, for information security with PHP. So query strings, they're the Git super globals. You guys all see them in websites all the time. Question mark, something equals something, key value pair. So when you see those, that's just a get or a query string. Post is a form submission. You have a form, you press enter, it goes and posts the data to some place on the internet. And lastly, cookies. I really couldn't think of a great way to show a cookie. So cookies are obviously that little piece of data that your browser stores somewhere, and websites can recall it based on a certain domain scope and, you know, pull in whatever it wants. So we're going to talk about attacks related to each of these, so just kind of have this idea in mind if you weren't already aware. Count and tax. Local file inclusion. So essentially you have some kind of vulnerability that allows me as an attacker to say, I want to see a file that is on your file system that was never intended to be seen through this method. SQL injection. Everyone, Barracuda Networks, MySQL.com. I don't know what it's been lately, but the SQL injections in major major breaches we'll go for, it's been kind of rampant. I know it happens all the time, and I see it all the time, but it just lately it's been kind of crazy. So in that case, SQL injection, instead of pulling out a file, which you can still do with SQL injection usually, you might just say, show me your user table, show me your password table for this site, how do people authenticate? Pull that data out, and then, you know, if it's hash passwords, rainbow table it, or whatever. And lastly, which is my preferred method, just an authentication or authorization bypass. I don't want a username, I don't want a password, I just want to get to the data without actually giving you credentials. And there's a very fun example of that in here today. excuse me. So this talk is basically divided into three tales, three scenarios, three commonalities. And the first one is on the clock. So on the clock, this is vulnerability research you're doing, and it's maybe adjacent to your work, maybe it is your work. In my case, being at an MSP, we have a lot of websites that get deployed. And just knowing my background, my bosses will usually say, hey, do you want to just take a look at the code? They'd appreciate a quick audit, just see if anything's wrong. This specific scenario happened 2 weeks after starting the company, or starting for the company, I should say. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm still trying to prove myself and just make sure these guys know I'm legit for a Linux admin. And they're like, look at some PHP code for us for this website that's launching next week. All right. So it's related to Forex. Forex is stock trading, day trading type stuff or whatever. So it's serious business, obviously, financial transactions, automated clearinghouse, all kinds of goodies for an attacker that they might go after. The developer is entirely incompetent. I mean, not like a small grain of incompetency, like you didn't miss a quote somewhere, or you didn't forget, or you forgot to like escape one parameter. The whole thing is just a mess. It was actually kind of dissatisfying to see so many problems, because I'm like, this is a customer of ours that we're hosting their website and we're managing their server. If they launch this on time, you know, we're going to get paid and, you know, start this contract with them. I have to tell my bosses after working there 2 weeks that there's no way in hell we can launch this site. Like, ethically, I can't let you launch a site where people are going to put their financial data in and just have it out there and get ripped off. And I'll show you how serious this actually was. So every account had a membership level. You know, if you were a member level 100, you had certain privilege, level 200, whatever. There was actually a hard-coded default in the index.php file that if you just passed a query string to it, every single password would all update with the same hard-code value. You can change any user password to any desired value. Delete all user accounts. Retrieve the ACH account information. Retrieve all user account details. And you could actually output it in like mailing list form or like address stamps. So in case you just wanted to like send your breach notification really quickly, you could just print out the list of all the customers and just tell them that the breach occurred. And the last one's kind of like the, okay, we've got this, is the actual just creating an administrative account and doing all this within administrative privileges. These other ones are obviously like, you know, backdoors or whatever. The last one is you just make credentials, you log in with those credentials, and you do whatever the hell you want. I don't know about you guys, but for any site, this sucks. For a site that you're putting credit card data in, your stock data, this is not by any means acceptable. So clown shoes. Clown shoes are something or someone that is a total joke. In my opinion, this developer is wearing clown shoes day in and day out. So here's the code part, and again, I'm gonna try to throw this out there for the people that aren't, you know, web programmers or just don't really know this stuff. If you're, you know, a pen tester and you know this, I apologize for the overviews. But so basically, all that's happening here, there's a function. You see the second line down says get var, so get variables, record string variables. You take in a level, and you take an email address. The latter part is the actual database query. So the level there is whatever input was for the query string for level and the email respectively. At this point, you can do whatever SQL injection you kind of really want. In our case, it doesn't matter because this function is completely exposed. By that, I mean that there's no actual authentication or authorization that is required to get to this page to execute that function. So if you put that query string in, that will effectively update that user to that level. Had you never been to the website before, had you never had a session, never had a cookie, you can still change any user's value however you want. So primarily, if you don't authenticate any kind of request, that's dumb. More so, and this is maybe just thinking in the broader scope of information security, if that shit happens, you want an audit trail to tell you what happened. You don't want to just be blind to what actually occurred. So, better case scenario, if you run this function, there should be an output somewhere that actually says, this happened this point with this IP. It could say who did it, but then it would just be a null. So, but you should at least be able to know this occurred and kind of get an idea of when. And the code doesn't sanitize escape. It doesn't do anything at a minimum level to verify that the inputs, not even that level is supposed to be an integer, not even that email address matches a regex. It just takes it all in. So the next one, a little bit more ugly to look over. This one's especially interesting to me because I'll kind of put this up there for you. The part up here where it says set password equals, so it does an MD5 hash of whatever the input was. But the great part is it actually does a database escape string. So it actually does escape the value. Okay, so you've cleaned up the input. It's good. But then if you look very closely where reset key equals, you know, another parameter, that parameter has no sanitization, no escaping. So you've taken the time to protect yourself from one input, but not the other. In this case, this is post data. So we just make up a bullshit post form, you know, throw it into Firebug, edit it, whatever you want to do. And in our case, whenever you have any basic password, it's going to reset all of them, and it's going to reset all of them to the value of test. So now every single password on the system for every user, including all the admins, is just test. So the one input is sanitized, the other is not. A basic tenet of web programming should be stored procedures or some kind of placeholder parameterized inputs. Whenever you take data in, you should define that data coming in is specific for one input. It's not part of the actual query string. It's very easy. There's a lot of frameworks that do it for you. You don't really have to think about it. This is, again, not really acceptable for a guy programming a financial website. And lastly, again, there's no audit trail when people change passwords. It's a really common thing, and there's no reason why there shouldn't be a just quick audit trail. And part three on this. At first glance, it looks like this is going to be somewhat secure. There's a function up there, isSuperUser. It's checking to see, is this person a superuser, and do they have a session set for this credential? That's pretty common. You're going to check to see what the privilege level of the session is, and if there's a session set, you're good. Else, it's going to set this client ID value instead of the one for the virtual client ID to just client ID. So there's obviously some kind of disparity there. If it's virtual client ID, it's supposed to be one. If it's client ID, it's supposed to be another. What's important here is that you're getting all these get parameters still, and you're assigning all the inputs to those variables at the top. What you don't see here and what you don't need to see here, really, is that, number one, the web page that this function's called on, again, has no authorization. There's nothing to stop you from, you know, accessing this function call. The second thing is that whole mess of, you know, if conditional up there does absolutely nothing for authentication. There's no authorization check. All that's doing is setting a variable that by what I could tell wasn't even used. So they have like this logic in here that could be used to verify something, and it's just kind of thrown away somewhere in the hierarchy of the code. So really what happens, you pass in those variables with a query string, something like that. You don't have to put them all in because it doesn't, of course, check inputs at all. You just put enough in to get a password and an email, which is the login. Group equals one is an admin group, and now you have your admin account. So the insert user isn't restricted from anyone. If you go to the website for the first time and know that query string, you can make an administrative account. Secondly, the isSuperUser doesn't do shit. Thirdly, the sanitization or verification of any regex, nothing happens to any of the get variables. This is pretty common throughout the whole code base. And again, no one has an audit trail, and if you did, again, there would just be a null space in your entry. So a lot about this talk is how you approach things when you have these situations. So some of it's just funny to see this crap happening, or sad. The other part is how do you approach things differently. So what I did was, especially because I was 2 weeks into this job, I created an executive summary. I kept things very, not layman's terms, but I kept it friendly to the reader. I basically just listed out showing an example of what it does, and then showing the subsequent SQL data that wasn't there and then is there, so you can see kind of that visual change, and then saying what the impacts are. Obviously, when you get to the point where you create an administrative account, the impact's kind of obvious, but I guess keeping it professional and keeping it not, I'm going to hack this site. As professional as you can be, and telling this client of yours that didn't want to know this probably, they're probably happy with the ignorance is bliss mentality, that they have to cancel their launch now by a couple weeks, you really have to present things in a way that's palatable. So there's a couple follow-ups to this one. The developer was fired. Cheers for that. A new one was hired who did fix the issues, fixed them rather, I guess, well. I didn't notice any, regressions or anything like that. I don't know how you could regress security anymore, but I verified that. I took the time to go through each one and then did a top-level overview of the rest of it. So fun fact number one, there's actually a second one. The developer uses the same code base for over 30 published sites. Most of them are charities that take in money. Obviously, the developer knows these are problems, and I can just say that I know for a fact other sites are affected. I'll leave it at that. So he knows it. He knows the problem, and he's not fixing it. Laziness. I don't know what it is. But it's a messy situation now. The second part to this, and this the first time I gave this presentation, that was about the end of the story. This company rehired him to do credit card processing additions to this code base. And we said, why would you do that? I have plenty of friends that do PHP. I could put it in if you really needed someone. They're like, well, Harry knows the code, so we're just going to let him do it. I'm like, so you fired a guy. You're going to bring him back on even though he's incompetent, and you're going to trust him not to be spiteful that you fired him to put in credit card processing and have access to your code base. They're like, yeah. So they did that. 2 days later, they said, we're stopping the company. They pulled the support contract, their site went offline. I don't know if it's a correlation, causation type thing, or if it's just they're so dumb that they deserve to just shut down. But good news is, if you're into Forex, you don't have to worry about going to this rogue, crappy site anymore. So that's story one. It's the perspective from the work example, just handling things. And who does actually PHP here? Okay. Any of you guys learn anything about security in that just short snippet a little bit more than you might have known? Okay, that's perfect. The second part is going to be correlated directly to like open source projects, things that you can go to different websites, pull down, and test like some basic security. A huge part of that, and who subscribes to like full disclosure, bug track, or stuff like that? So CVEs, you guys are probably at least a little bit familiar with. CVE stands for Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures. It's basically just a unique identifier to take a situation where there's vulnerability in a given piece of software, uniquely identify it, and then you can reference it whenever you have to talk about a situation. It's only for packaged software offerings, and so if you have a website vulnerability that's pertaining just to the website, there's actually no CVE correlation. There is something called the, I think, Web Hacking Incident Database. And so basically, if there's a website that has a vulnerability, if it gets publicized, that's the caveat. If it gets publicized, you can tell them, and they'll assign a unique ID to that incident. But as far as anything else, it's really just for packaged software offerings. They put, and by they I mean MITRE, who's the organization that kind of runs all this. A CVE is usually supposed to be involved in a responsible disclosure, and a lot about this talk is my own perspective maybe about actually doing things responsibly. It's not about throwing, a post on full disclosure before anyone has a chance to fix it. ideally, you're going to want to contact and allocate a CVE before you do any, you know, notifications at all about the vulnerability. It's great for keeping organized issues organized and easy to reference. It's really hard to say, like, oh, do you remember that, you know, one SQL injection and some version of whatever? If they've had four or five, you're probably going to want to limit it, narrow down the scope. And really, it's a main thing, honestly, is just preventing duplication of vulnerabilities. It's been time after time that I've gone to report something for a CVE, and then I do a quick search and find out that some guy just arbitrarily posted it on full disclosure like a couple months before, but never had a CVE, so I never really actually noticed it. So if you kind of just toe that line, everyone can kind of, you know, get involved and actually have, you know, a lack of duplication, a lack of redundant effort for no gain. So that's a quick CVE overview. CVE process is actually really easy. Finding vulnerability is obviously the fun or the interesting part, and then after that it gets kind of boring. I have 9 or 10 CVEs right now in the past like 6 or 7 months, and it actually gets pretty bothersome to have to ask for them and just do stuff like that. But once you actually find the vulnerability, you're well on your way. But then you probably should actually talk to the vendor and make sure that it's actually a vulnerability and that it hasn't already been reported. Now, that's not to say been reported in the sense that this vulnerability has been published, but obviously if I'm communicating to the developer and saying there's a problem, he may have already gotten an email from someone else saying there's a problem. So contact the vendor. You don't want to be the guy that has like duplicate vulns out there that, you know, you're a week behind or whatever. Just talk to the vendor at all possible. CVE numbering authority is a CNA. Basically, if you post a message to full disclosure or bug track and say I need a CVE for X, you know, someone's going to give you one. I personally go through Steve Coley at MITRE. He's very friendly, very quick to contact, and just say, hey, I need a CVE for this, and they'll pop one back in a day or two. And I do mean ideally, the vendor does care and fixes it. You'll see that some do and some don't. Release an advisory. You should always have the CVE included anytime you publish this information anywhere. That way, whenever it gets indexed, it'll be identified the right way. And last thing you can do is, if you've ever been to a CVE page on MITRE, you'll actually see a list of links related to that CVE. So anytime you publish it on any, you know, archive or whatever, you can give links back to MITRE and they'll actually publish them. So you have like one collective place where all this information for all the posts about this come together. So that brings us into the second tail, which is the community. This goes back kind of really to the boredom side of things. So SourceForge, FreshMeet, whatever, GitHub, however you search for software, it's a pretty quick way to just find some random crap, more or less. So not everyone releasing software, whether it's paid or free, is necessarily good at their job. Everyone in IT knows that already, but if you're just maybe a web programmer and you really don't install software all that often, or you're not implementing things that you can see these issues, you might think like, yeah, everyone's, you know, there's pretty good efficacy to all this software, and you know, everyone's doing a pretty good job. Maybe they don't get everything. No, there's some really shitty code. So this was actually my first CVE. WSN links. Anyone ever use any WSN product? They have like forums and like CMS and stuff. So this one, at this point in time, WSN had been out for years, like 4, 5, 6 years. So it's one of those things that you make almost an assumption that on a long enough timeline, the likelihood of a vulnerability goes to zero or something like that. You know, it's not true. So the number of, if you look up WSN links, you'll find plenty of CVEs over time, and there's still, in my opinion, some left. I just didn't feel like trying to track down exploitations. So there are two variables that get populated with get values. The unique challenge of this, and it took me a while to actually do it because I was doing it blind. So, I could have downloaded the software, but that's not fun. So, I was just doing this based on some output I was getting with a debug from a website, and of a friend, by the way. It's not like some random person. In this case, and you can kind of see how it pulls together, and this might be a little harder to see. So, the first part, this name condition up there, that's where you basically have to stop the existing query as it's written for the search page. At that point, and this is the most common way you're going to see with MySQL exploitation, is a union select. If you're dealing with something like ASP.NET and Microsoft SQL. Usually you can just pass semicolons and delimit queries into it. It's a lot of fun. But with PHP, especially with MySQL, how it's built, you really can't pass in new SQL queries. You can only append to what's already there. So a union select is a pretty quick way to do that. The thing about a union select is it's actually pretty powerful. What's happening there, and I can just kind of pull it together for you guys, it's going to select that PHP system request command, that whole string. That's going to make a file on the file system in the public web directory that when you go there, whatever query string you pass for command, CMD, it's going to execute that on the system. It's going to interpret it as a shell execution, and it's going to run it. So now you have a remote shell. You could do similar things if you wanted to dump database information to a file. You can use the file privilege if it's available, dump it out to a file, grab it all off the website. There's a lot of different exploits with SQL injection, but in this case, you actually have to, that where it says and name search, you actually have to bridge two different queries, and that's the part that took me a while doing it blind because I didn't know exactly the syntax, and so you kind of just guess and check and do some due diligence and hope for the best. I had given up on that like once or twice and just came back to it and finally just nailed it. So a lot of it's just kind of like fun hobby, especially when it's open source software. There's no loss. There's only gain for helping the community and helping the developers. So just kind of fun. Sanitization happens kind of spotty in this application. Say what you will about policy as a way or compliance as a way to fix things, but in the installation document, there's no reason that I could find why file privilege, which is the ability to write files to the file system, should be there for this application. If you take away that, you take away an attack, a way to actually capitalize on a vulnerability. So maybe your exploit is mitigated a little bit, maybe there's still bad things you can do, but if you took that kind of like defense in depth mentality, you could have limited the scope of what was actually being attacked. This is a really weird one. I really don't know why this is, but I did find out randomly that passing debug equals one actually turns on in the default installation of this full like SQL output when you get an error. So when I found that, things sped up a little bit, but you still didn't know exactly how things were coming together. So for some reason in default installation, if you ever see WSN links, just pass debug equals one, all your SQL errors will just kind of get outputted and it's much easier to do the injections. CVE. So there fix for this was actually blacklisting union in strings. That's not exactly a fix. Yeah, so. The good news, very nice guy. The new version had 3 days after the notification had occurred. So really what should happen is he should have actually fixed SQL injection, not blacklisted SQL injection phrases. Now, to be fair, by blacklisting union in a MySQL PHP situation, you really did cut off that I can quickly think offhand most of the attack vectors for something like this. However, there's better ways to do it. So getting back to the whole like bypass situation, does anyone want to yell out what the hell's wrong with this? That's a point I make later, but not the problem. I have a YubiKey for the first person that gets it. Boom, right. So, this application, I'll get you one after. This application was one of those things that they do, at least that I noticed, they do sanitization of everything. They regex everything. Everything that happens has a good basis for web programming. And it's another one of those situations that I deleted the files once, I re-downloaded it to look again because it's a pretty large code base. And I'm just looking through these, and my eye just zones in on that. And I'm like, okay, so somewhere clearly, there's got to be another part where it checks, like, there's a session, or there's some other thing, or no, you literally just create two cookies with any values blank, even, and you are an admin. don't clap for something that horrible. So the contents of the cookies don't matter. There's no verification. There's no nonce. There's no, awesome session verification. There's just nothing. It's just you're an admin. Congratulations. So back to your point, there is no reason to be storing a cookie in a password in a cookie in the first place. I haven't found a valid argument of why the hell you do something like that. You should have unique tokens that adhere to a session. Game over. But aside from that, the cookie itself should be unique and encrypted. There's no uniqueness or encryption, and there's actually no value to those cookies. They're just being created for the fact of somehow showing authentication. That one was special, but this gets a lot more special. So there's actually two products, same vulnerability between the two products. So kind of cheap for me to get two CVs, but you know, who's counting? No updates have actually been fixed that I know of to this point, and this was January. Yeah, you'll find out why. Disclosure to the vendor was met with legal threats and ignorant dialogue. Barry's probably not selling it well enough. So the vendor claims that the user should rename their admin folder to prevent this issue. So if you don't know where the admin folder is, you can't get to the path that will actually let you get the admin. Sir? Yep. Yes. I don't know who uses the CMS. It's pretty much crap in my opinion. But it's definitely possible. And you'll see why I didn't hold off publishing these indefinitely right about now. So this is a Swiss company. I thought the Swiss were really happy, nice people. They're not. No. So this is just a litany of hilarious responses I got back. Does anyone know John Oberheide? No? Okay. He does Android hacking. He's pretty big, and then kernel hacking. So I sent him this one over, and he got a good kick out of this one. We do not understand why you try to manipulate the softwares. I am sure that you are aware that it is illegal to do so. So open source software, Creative Commons license, actually, for some weird reason. I don't know who does Creative Commons for their whatever. It is not your duty to publish anything related about our softwares as long as we ask for it. What you are trying to do is find a security hole, publish it so that everyone can hack a system. That is the illegal part, so be aware of this. Correct. Yeah. Quick overview. Every time I find a vulnerability, especially when it's open source software, I have like the stock form. I say, here's the problem. Here's what I think a remediation would be for if you want that help. And I usually give 2 to 3 weeks that if I don't hear back, I'll try to contact again. And then on the fourth week, usually, I'll just publish at that point, because a month, two contacts, for something that, like this, it should be doable. I usually get answers back within a day or two, honestly. So, so this Swiss company is telling me about their Creative Commons licensed software that, in my country, the USA, I'm going to go to jail somehow, and they're going to extradite me to Switzerland, and... The illegal thing is to publish a security gap to show other people the way how to attack. That is the same thing as telling someone how to build a bug. Good point. It is also not illegal. However, the person who equates their shitty CMS product and the evasion of authentication for their 5 users to making a bomb is not really right in the head. And this, I think this is the next one. Okay, so this last statement, and this is where I get like serious for a quick second. This is the shit that the reason why I actually like doing vulnerability research on the side, because I think we have to keep people accountable with attitudes like this. Of course, it could be made safer, and we know how to do it, but we have designed the software so that renaming admin folders gives us less work. That is verbatim a quote from an email I received from them. So in their case, they know I'm going to publish this. They know it's a problem. The solution's pretty quick. You just add a PHP session ID and you're done. And yet they still want to, and this is the best example I can think of. I don't preach like security through obscurity is a bad thing. It's all about defense in depth. It's security is a process, not a product, right? So at this point, this is exactly why people get pissed off at security through obscurity. This is the reason. If I can actually. There we go. So that's the second part. with that exact company. We're going to go into another one. Another primer, PHP, if you weren't aware, even though it's an interpretive language, PHP is a C application. The interpreter is C. If you've ever done CGI development, you probably know all about null byte attacks. It's kind of like the low-hanging fruit of most CGI apps, right? It's not uncommon in PHP either. So when you're doing a call that maybe you're going to a file or something with PHP, you're opening a file, and you're taking that input in, if you actually end your string with a null byte, so like %00 backslash zero, that actually ends the string, because in an array for like a string C, that's going to end the string. There's a whole, probably another talk somewhere else about that, but just a quick overview. So this is a really good example, and some of you might have done this, because it's not obvious from a PHP perspective. This is only obvious if you know about null byte attacks within C. So someone takes in a file parameter. So this could be a PHP file. This could be like a JPEG. You might be including like an image on your website like this. So it might look something like that. And what's going to happen if I'm trying to do a local file inclusion attack, it's going to append the .php. So there's obviously no file that I probably have that's called etc/password.php. So effectively, this attack is mitigated by the fact that this extension is being added as the suffix. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be like the de facto POC is going to be like, oh, etc password. Now I can like see your user's name. If you add, however, in the parameter, the just %00, you get null byte attack, now the string's that. So this isn't a PHP attack, it's a C attack, but PHP is vulnerable. This is one thing that a lot of developers don't know because it's not really within the scope of PHP programming. And this is a very common thing to see if you're not aware. So exactly that example, this person takes in a request called P, which becomes a page, and it includes whatever page you pass, null byte attack, password file. So the only thing that by default, unless you have like web application firewall or something else, Magic Quotes GPC, which is disabled by default for years now, that will actually protect this attack or from this attack, but most people don't have it and they really shouldn't because that adds a whole other litany of problems and laziness. There's no sanitization or regex, so there's nothing that says, don't put slashes in here. You're expecting really probably a alpha string with no special characters, and yet I can pass that in and there's no problem. So the real problem here is obviously the null byte attack. You really need to consider when you're doing something that you shouldn't rely on a concatenation of strings to protect you from an attack. So that was another CVE. Vendor got that patched like within hours and did something kind of weird. I don't really approve of it. He actually released the same version with the patch and didn't increment. And then I asked him about why he didn't do that. He's like, oh yeah, that's coming. So he was trying to like slip it in. And so part of the full disclosure process is you don't have to be an asshole to these people, but if you see them doing something that's not helping, it's just pushing dirt under the rug, you might want to call them out on it a little bit. So that's null byte attacks are the real problem. And then file inclusion, whenever you're doing something that you just for some reason ultimately have to take in, something you're going to pass to the file system for an include or require once, whatever it might be, you need to do everything you can to extract what should only be there and garbage everything else. So those two are the second tail open source software. If you ever have time, and this is something that I really advocate for people that aren't in InfoSec by trade, there's no reason why, if you're a PHP developer, that you can't download some applications and check out what your peers are doing. And there's certainly no reason you can't help them. So if you're looking for something to get yourself involved in the InfoSec community, and publish some vulnerabilities, it's very quick. Not everyone who's a pen tester or a vulnerability researcher is necessarily a programmer. They just learn what to look for in certain contexts, right? You as a developer already know what to look for. You're already a step ahead of the game. So the third one, and this is the last tale, is basically software as a service gone wrong. And this really encompasses any website on the internet that you just go to or you happen to see. So in my case, I signed up for a gym membership. Noble act for a geek. Your gym's online fitness integration website has broken single sign-on, causing massive personal information leak and, you know, personal health information leak. Not exactly what you're looking for when you're just trying to get in shape. And this is one of those things that, and this happens, I think, a lot. If you do pay attention to InfoSec, you notice things. You get to a point, and I don't profess to be, like, in InfoSec. I'm on the periphery. I'm adjacent to it. But when I go to a website and I see a certain string in a URL, I'm like, I bet that has SQL injection. I bet, you know, you can increment that integer and something happens. You just kind of get used to it. So I don't actually have access to this code because, well, for lack of a better word, there's no reason why I would. But in this case, this is my pseudocode of what I think this looks like. And because literally this is how it works. There's supposed to be some kind of authentication verification, and there just isn't. I don't confess that anything I do is impressive. I don't think information security is about really sweet exploits. I think it's fun when you find one, but information security is about securing information. No matter how lame the exploit is, the vulnerability is even worse. This is literally the way to exploit this thing. They have an integer from a member ID. You change the integer, and now you have a different member's information. That's it. What's fun about these kinds of vulnerabilities especially is that you think of all the times you go to a web page, you have your member ID up there somewhere, and you accidentally, like, put a backspace in. You're like, oh shit, what was the last number? And you're like, 3. You type 3 in, and now you accidentally have someone else's because yours was 4. You don't have to be, like, in a malicious intent mindset to find these things. They might find you sometimes just out of sheer luck. In this case, that was really the case. So point one is actually the most important point, and we'll kind of discuss that a little bit more in a second, but I signed up for a gym membership, okay? And by signing up for a gym membership, this online integration partner was given my information before I said I wanted to give them this, and I'll show you why and tell you why I know that. There is no single sign-on at all. There's no session to get from A to B. You just go to that URL with a certain integer, and you're there. There's no way that there was any kind of QA testing on this. I just don't really understand how this got through, but it definitely did. So for the vulnerability verification, and I'll talk about a little bit of like what you should and probably shouldn't do to verify things in a second. But in this case, because it literally was strings that I was passing and just numbers changing, all I did was basically made a more or less a curl script that just hit a sequential amount of IDs. And of those, if I got a certain page back with a certain string, I knew it was activated. If it wasn't, okay, it wasn't activated. It wasn't a valid account. The second one, I just did 1,000. And that's after I knew what the difference between activated and unactivated meant. And of the 1,000, sequentially, I found 76 accounts that were active. The data down here where I say one user had a picture that basically, I found what a page looked like, and I just did a regex to find if these things match. So I wasn't really, like, zoning in on people's data. I was just seeing what data was present for, you know, account I found. So this is an unactivated account. First name, last name, date of birth, gender, email. So if we're talking in terms of Epsilon, this is a, you know, shit show. This is, like, the worst thing ever. Because Epsilon, clearly, you have a person's name and their email, and the world ends. So the thing about unactivated account, when you actually went to the URL with a member ID that was not your own, what would happen is form data was pre-populated before you ever signed an agreement, said you wanted to sign up. When you went to the landing page to sign up, your data was already populated. This was on the integration partner side. It wasn't coming from the actual partner side unless it was like an API call or something. Either way, this data was transmitted to their form, so they actually had the data in hand. I've never found any reason, and they've never told me why that would be the case, but clearly they're sharing information that you otherwise probably wouldn't want some random company to have. An activated account, however, photo, first name, last name, date of birth, gender, email, phone number, and for all you personal people, height, weight, body fat percentage, the time zone of your membership, essentially, the company for your gym, there's actually a nice workout schedule feature. So if you want to stalk someone and you want to know where they're going to be, when they're going to be, and they don't force wear Twitter, you can just go to the workout schedule and find out when they're going to be at the gym and wait outside if you're so inclined. And medical history, blood pressure, heart problems, surgery, pregnancy. So one thing I did do, and this is, again, I tried to be respectful of everyone's privacy in this process. I basically looked for email suffixes for email addresses that were in that data I had found. There were people at Oracle, there were people with the government, there were all kinds of people that potentially either themselves or family members would have been at risk had people gotten this information about their life. Or just take maybe a person in Congress or some other random person that has a public image. And now you're the one spouting out that, oh, hey, they were pregnant, but they didn't have a kid, so did they have an abortion? There are a lot of implications. And you talk about HIPAA, that whole bottom section is pretty important to a lot of people, and you probably wouldn't want a lot of that detail to get out. The company is actually like four or five people. This is the integration partner, not the gym. The gym that was affected was actually a multi-country gym franchise. So it took me a lot of follow-ups, and the first emails were very friendly. They're very, very thankful, thanks, whatever. I had sent a report, like I mentioned, and the report wasn't shit's broken, fix it. It was like a white paper, essentially, detailing what I did, how I verified it, what's wrong, what needs to be fixed, what's vulnerable. And I did it in the most, as if I was doing it for work, basically. So as things went on, the number of lawyers and executives got added and added and added, and I started noticing the trend going downwards for their happiness. So I just kept saying, hey, I'm here to help. I'm not here to breach anything. I don't have a bone to pick. This is my information. My girlfriend goes to the same gym. I don't want her workout schedule to be published to anyone online. These seem like pretty reasonable things to tell you guys about. So just stuck with that, and it took 3 weeks. And I told them multiple times that, in most situations like this, you guys should take the website down, put it under maintenance, do something, but not leave this up vulnerable. They chose to leave it vulnerable for 3 weeks after I reported it. I don't know at what point negligence falls into a conversation, but to me that seems negligent, but whatever. So customers know, here's my only real animation for the whole thing. So 90,000 customers were notified, and I have to say allegedly, not because I'm trying to be contrarian, but I never received a notice, and my girlfriend didn't receive a notice. I was told this number specifically by the CEO. I can't verify that it did go out to everyone, but that's the number I'm told. So, the cool thing for people in InfoSec, if you really are passionate, it's about protecting people, protecting businesses, maybe the company you work for or a client. So 90,000 people might not be, in the grand scheme of things, a lot of people. But it's kind of cool to think that 90,000 people's personal information isn't vulnerable because I did something. So ethically, had you seen that and not wanted to get into the, legal battles or whatever, it's very easy to walk away. And I'm not saying it's a great idea to always look into these things because sometimes, you could be the one getting sued. But I think, generally speaking, ethically, most people can't walk away knowing that that is a problem. That might just be me. So, it's a very thin line between committing a crime and trying to help. I can't tell you where that line is. I'm not a lawyer. I've probably been pretty lucky in some situations, but the thing I always keep with, and I'll get to this in a second, is really just keep your ethical sense about you and keep your common sense about you. And if something does happen, unfortunately, hopefully you can take a moral stance and say, listen, I have a reputation. You can look into it. I'm just trying to help you guys out because I don't think any of your clients want XYZ information on the internet. Don't make threats. Don't, try to tell them what they should do. Treat it like a customer. Tell them that, this is a problem. You're in information security. You're a web developer and you notice this kind of thing very quickly. You just want to help. And remember, in our country, you can be sued for anything at any time by anyone. And it doesn't matter if you're guilty or not guilty. They can put you through a lot of hell. They can take a lot of money and time out of your life and add a lot of stress for no reason. So if you do notice something like this, be careful with how far you go with it and probably act quickly and do as little as possible to just prove it's a problem and leave it at that. I think mitigation at that point is probably a good idea. And again, ethics and common sense, it doesn't mean you're not going to get sued at some point if you happen to do something like this, but what are you going to do, right? So if you do the right thing consistently, I think reputation, especially in information security, has a lot to do with it. I mean, if you're the kind of person that has gotten indicted for a bunch of random things, and you know you screw around too much, and you were the guy caught outside your school in high school doing some hacking, you might want to lower your profile. But if you're like me, that I don't have a criminal record, I'm pretty well known in some parts of the community for IT, I teach whatever. Hopefully they don't really want to threaten you. Hopefully they embrace it as this person's legit. They just want to help, and there's no reason why we should think otherwise. Full disclosure, and this is still responsible disclosure, it keeps companies, especially like our friends at Pointer, a little bit honest. Even if they don't fix the vulnerability, at least I can tell people they're not fixing the vulnerability, and maybe you should watch out. And responsible disclosure, honestly, for the CVEs, for the websites I've contacted, it's honestly worked out better than not. And even if it hadn't worked out in the best way, even if some people kind of got on me before they let it go, ultimately, I'm still happy with what I did because I know it made some kind of impact on someone's life. And, at some point, you've got to take a little bit of risk to help some people out. And it's, vulnerability research, and this is more for the open source side of things. It's a lot of fun if you like, really whatever. If you like security, it's cool. If you like programming, it's cool. There's a lot of people you can help and a lot of people you can teach. I think education, because I have taught, is pretty important. And if you can just kind of lead people down the right path, maybe it'll, be a little bit more progressive when people talk at a PHP conference and go, did you know what null byte attacks are? And if they can disseminate some of that information around their community, maybe we can all have a little bit easier of a job every day. So my thoughts, InfoSec is really everyone's responsibility. Again, just because you're a sysadmin, just because you're a web programmer, we all have to take it into account, and we're all kind of tasked with spreading information that help people in their job. There we go. So I hear this too often, especially from clients that have developers. Well, we didn't build it with security in mind. I've actually had a client tell me about their developer in this context, but they said, well, we didn't tell the developer to do this with security in mind. I don't know at what point we got that security is an afterthought. I realize there are things you miss in security that maybe you don't know every tenet to hit, but security shouldn't be an afterthought. It should be a core thought. You might just not know security very well to do the right thing all the time. In my opinion, ethics and information security are not allowed to be separated. This whole certified ethical hacker thing is kind of bullshit to me. Like, I don't know why it has to be it should just be certified hacker, and the ethical is implied in brackets somewhere. We shouldn't have to dictate that ethics and ethical treatment of people's systems and people's information should be something that we give a handshake and a certificate to. It should be the status quo in IT. And as you probably saw from that last one, it's great when you find really cool, really unique exploits. I'm always impressed when someone does a no-op sled or something and does some cool shit. But realistically, if you're protecting data and you're protecting people from hurting themselves, in the case of some programmers, that's the point of information security. The exploits and finding cool research and publishing vulnerabilities, that's all kind of on the periphery of what information security is about. It's kind of like this extra little, thing to hold your hat on. But realistically, you should be focusing on what's best for a client, what's best for your friend, what's best for your family. So a quick thanks to John Overhyde. He was the guy that I basically contacted based on the number of CVEs he's had, and a good friend of mine. What do I do? How do I get a CVE? All that kind of stuff. Steve Christie at MITRE, I said Steve Coley earlier, I apologize. His email is S. Coley, I don't know why. But Steve Christie at MITRE, he's the guy that gives me all my CVEs, really nice to talk to. And then Todd Jarvis at PacketStorm Security. So, does anyone know him? I've never met him. I don't know if he goes like DEF CON or anything, but I've never seen him around. And it's weird because when I sent him a vulnerability to just put on PacketStorm, he sends me thank you emails. He's like, thanks, this is a really cool exploit. I'm like, dude, I appreciate you publishing it, but he's just an overtly nice guy, so he gets a shout out tonight. There's my contact. I'm on Twitter. I don't really publish a whole lot of security stuff, but if you ever want to just talk about, whatever, I do cloud, I do InfoSec, I do PHP, I do sysadmin. So if there's anything you want to talk about, I try to keep kind of diverse in what I work in. And then my website, uncompiled.com, it's mostly just kind of a news aggregation website for security stuff. It's kind of Unix, general security. And then I have all my, there's a Mark Stanislaw part to the website with all of my CVs if you want to look at any of that, or the slides for tonight. So, I really appreciate everyone's time, and hopefully you got something out of it, or just maybe a new perspective on something that you might have had otherwise before. So thanks for your time, and any questions? Awesome. There we go. No to which side of the line. At the point that you do anything that you knowingly can look at data of someone else's privacy, I mean, I'm sure there's something in the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of that might tilt that. It's possible. Yeah, and that, I think that's part of my. Yeah. I'll meet you halfway. So, yeah, I could have stopped, and I could have just said, "Hey, here's a problem." My point. That's honestly a lot of it. Persuasion and in saying like, okay, I can throw a single quote into this URL and I get a SQL error. Okay, so you have SQL injection by just default, but does that SQL injection allow you to get anything? Does it actually let you form a query? That's the difference between someone and that's the point where you have to say, is this enough? Do I tell them and hope for the best, or do I just, you know, get a version string out from MySQL, and that's, yeah. So a lot, part of this is kind of a cautionary tale, like, you're gonna have to make the decision. You know, sometimes you might have a rapport with a company that you notice these things on. Sometimes you might have a friend that works in IT there. It's all going to be determined on what you know, who you know, and how quickly you can assess a situation to let someone know there's a problem. I would definitely say, in retrospect, that I probably should have done less, honestly. But, yep. No, I really don't like lawyers. You know, it's one of those things, like, the most, and I hope I didn't give the wrong impression, 99% of what I do is just open source software. These are the things that you literally walk past on a given day on the internet and see and just report. This is one example out of, you know, think of how many websites we all go to in IT on a given day, multiply that by 365. On a long enough timeline, you're going to notice something. The more knowledgeable you are, the more you're going to see without even trying to see it, right? And that's kind of the case some of us fall into. Like, we know that there's a problem. Check it out as quickly as possible. The turnaround time is something I always try to stick with, because I know they're going to look at logs, right? As soon as I see a vulnerability, there's not more than an hour that goes by that before I report the vulnerability. I think, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but malicious intent and motive, they're kind of underlying tenets of if someone's guilty or not. There's no reason I give a shit about anyone's information if I'm telling you about it an hour later, and there's nothing I really am going to gain because, you know, I'm just an InfoSec guy that's trying to tell you there's a problem. So, again, thin, thick line, medium-sized line. Matt Neely might know more about line width. Any other questions? Probably wrapping up here in a second. Yeah, we'll probably bail. I'm going to go upstairs. What room? Todd, do you know what room I'm in? Stern. So I'll be upstairs in Stern's if you guys want to talk. I have a couple more YubiKeys. You already got one. If you want to come up and ask me a question, we can just pawn one off like that. So, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. I hope you guys learned something.